Hello, welcome to episode 132 of Conversation Street. We're running a little bit late today because we've had a bereavement in the family. Gemma's nan sadly died last night, but we're all caught up now and we're going to carry on with the podcast anyway. Today we'll be talking about the episodes between the 12th and the 16th of January. So as always, I'm your host Michael and I'm here with Gemma as well. Let's get started with Corrie history. So 70 years ago, this week, we had a birthday. Maureen Naylor, who later was Maureen Holdsworth, and Maureen Webster was born. And I don't think this birthday was mentioned this week in the show. It's Todd Grimshaw's 30th birthday this week. Did they mention that?
No, you would have thought they would have done, really.
I would have thought that would have been quite a big one to mention, but they didn't. Happy 30th, Todd.
Maybe he's pretending he's not 30.
Oh, yeah, well, Coronation Street, you know, with ages and always the best of that. 25 years since Ken decided to sell the Weatherfield Gazette, the newspaper that he owned. And also that week, Dawson's Cafe was renamed Jim's Cafe, and that was where Gail and Helmer spent many years making tea. 10 years ago this week, Sally started an affair with Ian Davenport. So that's about it. Not a huge week in Corrie history this week. But let's move on and talk about this week, Street Talk. Okay, so obviously next week in Coronation Street, I don't think there's any hiding the fact that it's going to be quite a big week, especially with the National Television Awards coming up. But even so, this week's not been, there's been no slouch either. I've really enjoyed all the stuff with the Platts going on, the big reveal of Gavin, or not Gavin anymore, Andy. Do you think we're going to be able to remember to call him that?
Yeah.
What are we going to do? Are we going to call him Andy while we talk about the storyline, or call him Gavin until his name Gavin is revealed?
I like Gandhi.
Steph called him that, didn't
he?
Yeah. I think we need to pick one or the other. I don't know. I think
we can just be Gavin until he gets revealed as Andy. That's
okay.
What I put in the notes.
Yes, we will do that then. So now we're going to start off with that one, our Rodigal Son storyline. And then we had a bit more Barlow's Bothers later on. Well, no, it was earlier on in the week, wasn't it? Because Tony was very naughty and had it turned over. We've got a little bit more of that a la carte story, the blossoming romance between Julie and Dev, with Mary being kicked out, pushed out. And they were the main storylines this week. But we also had, it's building up to what's going to be next week's big storyline. Just a innocent minibus trip up to the awards. I'm sure nothing bad's going to happen at all there. But Carla, she wasn't too bothered about going to the awards, but it's because she has already had an award this year.
Yep.
She won the much more prestigious Conversation Street Best Lass of 2014 award. But she's gone up to get her second award of the year, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And there was a little bit of boring Luke in the Maria.
Yeah.
Football.
That wasn't very good.
That wasn't.
Some chickens.
Oh, yeah. I even came up with a good storyline title for this, and nothing happened with the chickens, but just in case, or if this ever develops into anything, the chicks at number six. That's what we can call that.
Hmm.
Right, so Rodigal Son first then.
Monday episode was Michael and Gail talking about Cully disappearing and Michael saying that people can't just disappear and that they should be looking. I don't know whether they mention it again, but it's kind of boring that they keep bringing it up. They should just get over it now.
Yeah, we didn't have any Callum this week either, did we?
Because she's not coming back.
Yeah. I think we'll just sit with that for a little bit then.
Meanwhile, Steph can't understand why she and Gavin are not getting it on because they kissed on New Year's Eve, but nothing happened since then, and Leanne advises her not to bother with him.
I kind of thought that more had been happening. How long ago was that? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I assume that... But no, apparently not.
Why she
not?
Gets in a mood with Gavin and tells him off for talking with Gail and Michael later.
Yes.
And then he's just about to ask her why she's annoyed with him, because just like, oh man, he can't tell why. And then a woman comes in to see, where is Michael Rodwell? But he just about manages to duck behind the bar. She says, oh, my boss said he's working here and I want to talk to him. And he's like doing the cut the head off.
I'm not here, I'm not here. Yes.
To Steph. And the woman says, I'm his fiancé, and he ran off in the middle of a Caribbean holiday with the rep.
I'm glad that finally things have moving ahead with this, because it's been kind of skirting about it for a bit, and I suppose he couldn't hide for much longer after this. So after, we learn from this that the real Gavin is actually evil, wrong'un,
I think unreliable. They're both fairly unpleasant characters.
Well, they've made fake Gavin Andy out to be fairly nice, apart from the big deception up to this point.
Well, it's so understandable.
I think he'll be able to get over it. I think once it's all smoothed out, especially where if and when the real Gavin turns up, it's going to make fake Gavin look like a saint. So,
well, Steph tells this woman that Gavin's gone, left last week, not to come back anymore, and she says, "Ah, well, he just uses women and runs away. That's what he does." So she goes off, and then Gavin sort of comes out
sheepishly.
And Steph and Luke give him the Spanish Inquisition, and he says, "I was a different person back then." But she doesn't want to hear it.
Choosing his words carefully.
Very
there.
Carefully.
Yeah, well, Steph is like wants to get rid of him there and then, doesn't she? Or is it? Oh, Luke tells him to stay away from his sister.
Yeah.
And Steph's just like, so she's suddenly been taken aback because she thought that Gavin was wonderful bloke.
Well, you would be shocked if, somebody... Because it looks like he just literally came out of this relationship and straight into Steph's
So is she, like, a rebound girl, or is she just going to be treated just as badly as this other woman?
So Michael's been the nice dad, saying, "Oh, that's funny. Well, I understand that you've changed from how you used to be," because he can't say anything about being horrible in the past.
Yes.
He abandoned him.
All got
him
our skeletons in the closet.
But you need to go and get things straight with Steph, and Gavin's like, "Oh, I've blown it."
He's going to go and do something, but then the conversation turns to Gail, and Gavin's like, "Oh, you need to tell Gail how much she means to you." I don't know, why were they even doing that? Because there wasn't any ill winds between Michael and Gail, was there? Anyway, so I think, or maybe it was just like encouraging Michael to propose to Gail. So anyway,
I don't think they spoke about that yet.
Didn't they? Oh, well, anyway, he says he'll try and talk to Steph if he'll go and talk to Gail. So Gavin goes over and does a lovely speech about just how special that she is and gets his face snogged off, so it doesn't take very much.
No, that's
easily appeased, yes.
Luke is very incensed when he finds out, but he gets persuaded not to go and tell him off by Maria. And then in the street... Did we say we wanted this to happen, or have we said in the past? But anyway,
I think we could have inferred that we wanted this to happen.
Michael and Gail are having a romantic walk home from the chippy, and they can hear Sharif's Chicken Sea music. And he says, "Close your eyes and imagine you're on a beach." And when she opens her eyes,
Dana Wendy. Oh, he's proposing. What did you think? A nice romantic proposal?
It wasn't until Gail ruined it.
Well, she does her Les Dennis Mavis impression then. He's like, "I don't really know."
And he runs off.
He runs off. He goes, Michael. Why did she say that? No, I suppose...
Well, because it's totally unexpected, isn't it? It makes perfect sense to him because he's on a ticking clock.
Yeah, he get married while he still can. I mean, I suppose that they have only known each other for less than a year, so...
Well, some people don't need that long, do they?
Well, she seemed happy enough at the end of the week that Steph was allegedly pregnant from Gavin after
don't
only
ruin
2 weeks.
It.
So,
don't ruin it.
Do you think that Gavin and Gail and Michael should get married, or is it a bad idea?
I think they should get married, and I said before.
I think it'd be nice for her to have I'd like to say a nice normal husband.
I want to know how long his contract is before I want her to commit.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I don't want him to die or something.
I don't want him to die. I want her to have a nice, normal husband. I mean, how long is he going to last with this heart problem that he's got?
Look,
I don't know.
Get on with the story instead of talking about things that we haven't got to yet.
Okay.
On Wednesday, Gail and Michael are miserable at breakfast, and Michael said, "Oh, I couldn't sleep." And David said, "Oh, you two have had an argument or something." And they're like, "No."
I was surprised that Michael was even there at breakfast. I assumed that he'd have gone back to his old flat, or could he? But I'd like to have seen that sheepish moment where he came back, or...
Gail tells Audrey that she's dashed Michael's hopes and she's worried about another marriage. I think it would be a big step. And Audrey's like, "Oh, you're lucky to have anyone." And Gail says, "Oh, I don't know, I haven't known him that long and his heart problems, or I don't know." And then she manages to convince her that she should agree to marry him. And Audrey says they should make a big deal of it and have drinks and nibbles at the bistro.
Yes. So meanwhile, Steph and Gavin are canoodling over in the morning, and... Leanne tells Steph that she must like a challenge, because I think after she heard what the woman came in and said, it's like she wouldn't have touched him with a barge pole. But anyway, Steph says, "Oh, it's okay, people change." So anyway, Gail's then going into the bistro, and Michael is there kind of
Commiserating with Gavin about his horrible life.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Michael still thinks at this point, doesn't he, that it's all over between him and Gail.
He thinks he's going to get dumped. So Gail's like, oh, I'm here for cleaning fluid. Are you busy this evening? Do you want to have dinner at the bistro for my treat? Oh, I'm going to go see Nick. And then Michael says, Gail's being really shifty. She's obviously going to dump me.
Yeah, I don't know why you necessarily thought
that.
Well,
because she did kind of come in and she's like, oh, can I see you later? In here, please. You wouldn't expect something nice to happen if somebody said that to you.
But if they're going to have it over dinner.
No, but somehow, sometimes
you might run off
and
leave me to pay.
Well, she said it's her treat.
Oh, okay, fine. So later on in the evening, everyone's standing around waiting for Michael to turn up there. And he comes and he's looking a bit freaked out. Gail says to him, look, you caught me unawares when you asked me to marry you. But then she asks him to marry her.
No, she says, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she says, will you marry me?
See, I think she stole his thunder here, and I'd be a bit annoyed if I was Michael. I think she should have said, can you ask me again, because I've got the right answer this time.
Well, I think we know who's going to wear the trousers in that relationship anyway, or has been
anyway.
I just
think it's a bit rude to turn down someone's proposal and then ask them again later. It's very rude.
But he says yes anyway. So
they love each other.
Give me eyes.
And then Michael tells Gavin the world is their oyster and he wants Gavin to be his best man. And then Gavin agrees and runs off. And then Michael's chatting away to Audrey. And gets all overcome.
Yeah,
holds
Gail's,
his chest.
What was Audrey talking about?
I don't remember.
Talking about, isn't it amazing where you've come after last year? You robbed our house.
And he holds his chest and collapses on the floor. And Gail says, oh, don't you dare leave me, Michael Rodwell, don't you dare.
What's she calling him by his full name? Just a bit
because
of a reminder.
It's more, it makes you listen when somebody says your full name.
I think.
Does he not have any middle names?
I don't know. Maybe he's got the same middle name as me as well.
Michael, yeah.
Michael John Rodwell, it's all right, we can say it. If I'd been in the middle of a heart attack and somebody was telling me, don't leave me, don't you die, that'd probably make me feel a bit worse.
Why?
Well, she might say, why can't she say, it's all right, don't worry, we'll get an ambulance
don't
or something.
Say,
don't leave me.
Oh, I
That's
see
like
what
she's
mean.
Thinking of herself, isn't she? You insensitive git.
Don't leave me, selfish bugger.
Can I at least have the engagement ring?
Oh, yeah, what one were you going to get me?
Yeah. Did he get one in the end? Because he went to Tracy's, didn't he?
He went
but
in
he
and didn't, go...
didn't get one from there. He must have got one from somewhere anyway. But so that was actually quite a good cliffhanger on the end of Wednesday's episode, because usually that's the kind of cliffhanger that they'd have like on a Monday or a Friday when there's another episode coming on afterwards. Usually the best you can get out at the end of a Wednesday episode is like characters having a hug and one of them looking worried over the other one's shoulder. But no, this is actually a proper cliffhanger that we had to wait 2 days for. Well, we had to wait 3 days. We didn't watch it until today. But anyway, the next we see is Friday. Michael's waking up in hospital to Gail and her Sudoku there, and they're waiting for test results. So, what did he have? Is it just like a heart scan or something?
I have got no idea what it was.
It's too technical and medical for me. But anyway, they're waiting for that, and Gail meanwhile has texted Gavin, but no reply because Gavin hasn't been seen since he scarpered after agreeing to be best man. Meanwhile, Nick is also trying to text Gavin as well because he's not coming to work, so people are starting to get a bit worried about where he is. Audrey goes to the hospital, and by that point Michael's like, look, I haven't heard about Gavin, is he okay? So Audrey says she'll go to his house, can't find it, but Steph saves the day and is like, I know where he lives because we were at it the other night. We didn't even mention that, did we, about they've consummated their relationship.
I don't know.
We did not say that because then I was going to talk about, I thought that she should have found his real name on the label inside his underpants.
Oh, that's
So anyway, Steph goes over there and I don't know why she believes he's in so much, but she's convinced he is.
Because she looks through the letterbox and she sees him move.
Oh, did she? I didn't see that she saw him move. Yeah,
she's
so
like, I'm not coming in. I'm not leaving. You better let me in. So he lets her in and she starts saying, oh, I know you must be feeling bad and about your dad and everything. And then she starts thinking that his ex is hiding and she storms into the bedroom and discovers that he's packing to run away. And then she starts berating him for running away from his problems and his dad needs him and everything. And he says, oh, I've been lying to you, or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And go and check my passport. And she's so thick, she opens it up. She goes, oh, you just look a bit rough in your picture.
I know, I thought this was going to be the start of a somebody else can't read storyline. Yeah. Tim can't read, Steph can't read.
She eventually realises that the name is wrong and it says Andrew Carver. And he says, oh, it's not the passport that's false, it's me.
Yeah,
she thinks, why have you got a fake passport? Oh, Steph, you silly girl.
So, yeah, she immediately jumps to the decision he's some kind of criminal. I suppose the fact that he was going to run away without even telling her does kind of make him look quite bad. When I was saying, oh, he's quite a nice guy after
all. Yeah, he is. He's horrible. He's actually really horrible. So, meanwhile, Michael and Gail go to get the test results and the doctor says, unfortunately, they are not very good.
Yeah, he's got to have open heart surgery.
Yep, and it can be done in a couple of weeks. Take it easy until then and don't have any sudden story revelations.
She says, you're not in a soap opera, are you? Because if you are, you
might die.
You need to go and see your sick mother or something for a little bit.
Leave for a bit. Take it easy. Don't have any... I can't remember what she said now. Don't have any shocks.
Don't have any really surprises.
Don't have any emotions.
Emotions, yeah.
So, Andy... It's Andy.
Andy, we'll call him now.
Andy says he used to compete with Gavin about whose dad was the worst, but Gavin always won because his dad was never there, blah, blah, blah.
I just thought it was a pretty poor reason about why he decided
It's one of the worst reasons I've ever heard. He says he decided to wind Gavin up by pretending to be his son. I don't understand how it was supposed to...
No, I was hoping for something a bit more than that.
Doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, what kind of rational plan is that for any normal person to come up with?
I suppose the way he was saying it is that he didn't plan it. He's like, he just started off doing it for a joke and he says, oh, I hope to get a free meal out of him or something.
How's it a joke?
I don't know.
It's not even like, it doesn't even make any sense. Well, it doesn't make sense at all.
Did he just want to like rub it into the real Gavin that he's like having a nice relationship with his dad or...
It doesn't know. It didn't get that idea at all. It's just he said he was just going to wind Gavin up, but I don't know what that means.
No, I don't mind. It's been a good storyline, I think, and I'm happy to just kind of forget about that reason.
I just wish they could have had some, just by chance,
I thought he was my dad. No, he looks like him.
Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
I'm sorry, but it doesn't make any sense. And he says, he was so genuine and nice, and when he asked me to be my best man, I realised that I can't do it anymore. I can't stay. And when I found out it collapsed, I couldn't go back, and I've wanted to say something for ages. And Steph says that you have to tell him. You have to tell him.
So we still don't know, do we, where the actual Gavin is at this point?
No.
We've seen him trying to contact him for months.
We know he's run off with a rep.
Oh, is that what he's done? Is he with his rep at the moment? Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Right, okay. So anyway.
Michael's got this bad news, and he says to Gail, oh, well, at least I can get fixed up and maybe get an extra 5 years out of my body. And Gail's like, oh my God.
5 years.
And Steph then, back with Steph and Andy, so she says, oh, it won't work. I can't believe anything you say. Unpack, speak to Michael, and then we can talk to each other. So Gail and Michael... Gail's freaking out about the surgery and she's telling Audrey that she's worried about it, and Andy phones up and Michael tells him to come round and speak to him.
Yeah, so
he needs to tell Gavin that he's got this heart problem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's nothing else he can do for the real Gavin because they can't get in touch with him in any way, but he thinks he's got to come clean and tell the truth. So he's going to go round there, and this led to the tension at the end of the week, didn't it? Because that's the big shock that could set him off.
Well, Steph goes round to the bistro and... Audrey comes in and tells Nick and Steph that Michael's got to have open heart surgery and has to take it easy and any shock could kill him. And Steph freaks out, tries to phone Andy up to stop him from telling Michael, but she can't get hold of him. So she goes around there and Andy's telling Michael that he needs to speak to him. And then Steph and Nick burst in and she's like, Gavin, you shouldn't say anything. If everything's okay, you should just leave it like that, okay?
I'm glad that Michael and Gail did spot something that was going wrong.
Well, they were like, what's going on? It's very suspicious.
It was not so subtle, was it?
No. She was like...
Let's just go outside and talk properly.
Let's quickly chat. So she goes outside and says, look, if you say anything, Michael's going to die. And Michael comes out to see them talking. And he goes, I figured out what's wrong. I know what's happened. You're pregnant, aren't you? Steph's like...
One, why would Michael jump to that decision? Is that the sort of thing you think of?
Were they openly dating?
What, since New Year or since this week?
Ever.
I think people... I think they were like flicking tails at each other. And
I mean, really, I thought they were going to say to each other, say to them, "Oh, we've finally decided to make it official that we're a couple."
Yeah, that would have made more sense.
Not, but, "Oh, I'm knocked up."
Yeah,
but and everybody comes outside, and Michael's like, "Oh, everyone, look!" And Nick's like,
Also, how soon after the act can one become? Can you sort of tell that you're pregnant? Because I mean, I don't know
it's
when.
It's longer than 2 weeks.
Yeah, or did they even broadcast that they only slept together on Monday night, and people have just been assuming there had been? The dates don't particularly add up. But anyway.
Well, if you're a proud father, then I don't suppose you mind.
I do think it was quite good that Steph immediately jumped to say yes.
It's funny.
A bit ditzy to Steph coming back again.
I think probably Michael's happy because he needs to accelerate his life into his mind the next 5 years. He needs to get married, have grandkids, settle down,
yeah,
and then he can die happy.
Isn't the fact though that he's now thinks he's got grandchildren, isn't that a kind of shock that or surprise or big emotional moment
you
that could also
so.
Set him up as well, I'm gonna be a granddad?
Well, I don't know, maybe it's because he came to it on his own.
Yeah, I guess so. But, so do you think that they're going to actually go through with this and she's going to have to like a fake bump and everything?
I
don't know how long it can last.
It's like setting it up for just a horrible, crushing disappointment. They're either going to lie and say, "Oh, I've had a miscarriage," which is terrible, or that she's going to say, "Oh, I was only joking, he's actually not even your son, so I don't know why you care."
Yeah, I don't like the idea that Steph is now kind of involved in his deception. She's a nice girl, isn't she?
Well, that's the end of The Rodigal Son for this week.
Yes, now let's go on to Barlow's Bothers, which was the problems at the beginning of the week. So, Ken has offered to work in the shop with Tracy this week, but he's putting his principles to one side to do so. I don't remember him having a problem with the shop.
Oh, they all had a problem with it. No, they all told her that they thought she was a terrible human being for having a shop.
Oh, what? Because
they all
did. Because it's taking money off of the innocent poor people.
Yeah, I think they're really naive.
Well, anyway, he does.
They never heard of eBay.
Anyway,
so he's gonna help out because he wants Tracy to feel better, and she's doing is worrying about money. So Tony's has this weird scene in the pub with Eva where he's talking about lions feeding and people don't know what's good for him and
that was
stuff.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, very odd scene.
Odd metaphors.
Then we had Ken and Todd together in Barlow's buys and Ken starts waxing lyrical about each item having a sad story to tell and having sentimental value and breaking people's hearts and stuff. And meanwhile, a customer is there looking at watches and eventually gets put off enough to leave. And Todd tells him to go away and stop. Take his break, basically.
I'd have quite liked to see more scenes between Todd and Ken there.
Yeah.
But no, only that one. So he goes off anyway.
Well, and then he goes to talk to Roy about it, and Tony overhears the conversation where Ken is saying that Tracy is so hard up that she's going to collapse under the strain, and he doesn't know how long she can keep going.
What a coincidence that Tony was there.
How coincidental. Tony comes into the shop when Tracy's there by herself and points out that some of the stuff that she's got is stolen stock, and she doesn't believe him initially, and sort of, you know, does this brassy bird act until he leaves, and then she does this kind of like side-eyed, oh God, wince. So she calls the buyer back and tells him she wants her money back, and he says no, and she says no, you're gonna give it to me back, I'm gonna phone the police. So he grabs her by the throat and pushes her against the wall, and she refuses to back down and kicks him in the ghoulies and takes the money out of his wallet.
I'm glad that she did that. And she didn't just like.
She didn't wait for Tony to rescue her. He bursts in, and then this buyer scarpers and says, "I'm not finished with you." And Tony's like, "Oh, let me help you out." And she says, "No, I don't need your help. I've sorted this out by myself."
I think that guy had a lucky escape. The number of objects that Tracy could have laid her hands on just around the shop.
Exactly. Like, she's got form.
The flute there that was there the other week, or anything. She could have caught over the head with you.
Right, so Tony meets up with this man from the shop. They're in cahoots. He's one of his cronies. Oh my gosh. He hands over a wad of cash and says, I'm going to finish what I started.
Did you suspect that he might have been working with Tony? I don't think there was anything.
I don't think I did.
Apart from the fact that Tony happened to walk in straight away, there wasn't any.
No, there was no obvious giveaways. And to be fair, Tracy was perfectly capable of getting herself in this kind of scrape without Tony's help anyway.
Mm. I think when Tracy finds out what's happened, Tony's... Well, he's going to be in for a lot of trouble.
He incurred the
wrath of Tracy Barlow.
Yeah. So, Carla, Ken and Todd discover the next day that the shop has been broken into and trashed. And Tony turns up and goes, oh, oh dear, what a shame. And she can't, Tracy's worried because she can't tell the police because some of the stuff was stolen.
It's not
and,
all of it.
And Todd says, no, wait a minute, you don't need to worry about that. You can just say the receipts got stolen. Stupid. So Tracy gets in a good mood because everything's going to get sorted out and she's going to get some new stock with the insurance money. But then the insurance company phone her and say they can't pay up because her last payment check bounced and she's not covered.
So is this
and
all because says, Tracy's broke because of the wedding?
Yeah. And she says, I'm done. Now, the problem with this is that Tony didn't know that she didn't pay her last insurance check. So really, Tony's ridiculous plan could have completely backfired in his into his face by, number one, making Tracy feel that she's an empowered single woman who can defeat a dodgy dealer.
Yeah.
And number two, by giving her a great big cash windfall when her shop gets trashed.
Yeah.
But sadly for Tracy, it turns out to his advantage.
Yeah, so he says that he comes in and he says, like, oh, we can have this up and running before you know
well,
it. Jason,
feel,
come and
I
refit it.
I feel bad for you. She says, I'm going to quit. And he says, I'll help you. And she says, no, I'd rather burn it to the ground.
Yeah.
But he convinces her.
Yes.
Well, no, she kind of like gives this shifty look and goes, all right then, $6,000 and you're in.
So was it 50-50 by the end? I was only half watching that episode. That's dangerous.
He agrees to 50-50 and she can still be the boss. And well, Tracy, Todd's like, I can't believe you agreed to that. And she says, oh, well, he hasn't won. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I think he's going to start doing things like her knowing it and he's going to get all his dodgy gear in and she's going to end up taking the rap.
I don't think this is the start of a beautiful business relationship.
No. I still don't like Tony. You're not supposed to like him as a villain because he's a villain, but I don't really like him as a villain either. I much prefer the Tracy and Todd in the shop or the Tracy and Rob.
Yeah.
I'm not looking. Or is Tony actually going to be working in the shop?
I don't know.
Is he just like...
He's just like a low-level annoyance, isn't he? He doesn't actually do anything that really gets you goat yet.
No.
If he starts doing proper evil stuff, he might be more...
Hands off our Tracy.
Well,
he wanted
on
to go
Friday,
honest.
He tells Michelle that he's got part of the shop business, and she says, oh, watch out for Liz. But when she does tell him, she just says, you're going to regret it.
Yeah, because Liz is back from Spain now, isn't she? And then it kind of merges into the Steve depression storyline because despite having a week in Spain, he's still depressed and miserable and Liz has booked him a doctor's appointment for Monday.
She thinks he's got an underactive thyroid.
Yeah, I can't believe that they suggest that, but still the word depression hasn't come up. Yeah, underactive thyroid has.
Well, maybe the point is that people just don't know what depression really is.
I don't know.
Because it's quite a common thing, isn't it?
What, depression?
Yeah.
I guess so. People have heard of that more than underactive thyroids.
Yes. Well, she said that she knows someone who had that problem, which is why she said it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, moving on to the smaller storylines of the week then. So, we've got the Alicarp one on Monday, because it's the twins' birthdays this week. I can't remember how old they're supposed to be. But anyway, Mary... Mary is just getting a nose pat out of joint all week, isn't she? First off, trying to make this Tudor house out of cereal boxes that's due in tomorrow. I don't know why. Homework should be due on a Monday and not Tuesday. And yeah, they shouldn't have left it to the last minute. And I'm surprised Mary let them leave it to the last minute, to
be
honest.
Well, she has a reason. I can't remember what it is. But there was a reason.
I think they should learn their lesson and get told off by a teacher.
Julie comes in. She lets herself in, which Mary gets annoyed about because she's got a key. And she says, oh, I've got twisted, children. Let's play it. And Julie says, no, they've got homework to do. No, sorry. Mary says they've got homework to do. And Julie says, oh, no, let's just play. So Dev comes home and Mary starts moaning at him about it. And Dev says, Julie doesn't mean to do any harm. And Mary says, it doesn't matter. She's still a detriment to the twins' education. And this has to stop.
I love how she thinks that making a Tudor house out of cereal boxes is going to go on and make them to be the next David Starkey.
Yeah.
Here's a secret. When teachers ask you to like make big projects and things for homework over sometimes a couple of weeks, it's because we don't want to be setting homework. And also, when we bring it in, we don't have anything to mark.
That's a very good point.
that's what I do it sometimes anyway.
Well, so Mary cooks everybody chimichangas and Julie insists that she joins them for dinner because she obviously Mary's making this for everybody else. She's not going to have it. But then Julie says, oh, please eat with us.
Well, Julie
feels bad.
Yeah, well, she's still trying to build bridges between her and Mary, isn't she? Because she knows that she's kind of muscled in on on Dev.
I would not like to be Julie.
No.
So they start talking about the fact that they're going to go out for the twins' birthday, and Mary doesn't like Julie's suggestion of the Annihilaser.
Annihilator.
The kids are really excited.
Yeah, is it like some kind of laser questing or something it's supposed to be?
Mary had a different idea of what they were going to be doing. And she gets annoyed and she drops off, but Julie says old Dev should ask her to come.
Yeah, so they do basically. There was just more of like the nice Dev and Mary scenes that they sometimes end the storylines with, don't they? With like saying, "Oh, everything's okay. The kids appreciate you. I appreciate you. You're going to come to the Annihilator with us." So that was kind of nice at the end of Monday's episode.
I don't think she goes in the end, though.
No, I can't.
It wasn't obvious, but I wasn't paying attention. She is singing to herself in the camper
on Wednesday, van,
and the twins and Dev come round. And they say, "Oh, the twins really missed you, and we thought you would want to spend some time with them on their birthday." So she invites them in, and then when the kids are inside, she goes to Dev and Julie, "I'm not stupid. You don't have to manipulate me into this." And
it's a bit
vicious.
Yeah, shock for Dev and Julie. You don't want to be on the wrong side of Mary.
No. On Friday, Mary's acting fine, but then maybe there's a bit of lingering resentment. And then Dev gets this package from Mumbai about this youth football team that he's sponsoring. Julie comes in and says how wonderful he is. But I think Mary thought she didn't appreciate it properly or something. She kind of like floated in and went, "Oh, that's great." And floated back out again, taking a packet of biscuits with her, didn't she?
Yeah, Julie did, yeah. Mary and Dev were having a nice conversation about it. And it was a nice bonding moment, I suppose, between Mary and Dev. And then Julie comes in and it's like, "Oh, Dev, you're so wonderful. Let me give you a kiss and everything." And now it's all about Dev and Julie.
Yeah.
I don't know whether we're going to hear about any more of this. It kind of is a bit of a random thing to have Deb to do, isn't it? Like sponsor a Mumbai football team. It's very charitable of him, but I do wonder whether like a little Indian boy is going to turn up on the doorstep one day or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Could be, or maybe Deb's going to go over there to see them. I don't know.
Maybe a new DVD special.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be cool, actually, in India. But that has an African one.
Well, why not?
Romania.
Why not?
That's the next logical step, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So that was that storyline. Let's move on to Carla's second award of the year storyline.
Yes. Not so prestigious because she doesn't even want to go. She's won the Northwest Fashion Trade Award.
That's what Alia finds out when she answers the phone.
I'd like to know what it takes to win this award, because the underworld is always on the brink of disaster. And have they done anything great recently? Or is it just because they're the only... How fashionable
can you really be with bra and pants? I mean, you can't really reinvent the wheel, yeah? Oh, no. I've seen yours.
In my pants, at least. Yeah, so she's won this competition. So Alia, I think she's doing the right thing by saying, "Oh yeah, Carla's going to come and be there." And Sally says, "Oh no, you don't get ideas above your station. It's not up to you to say what Carla can and can't do."
Well, she didn't want to go.
She's back off holiday now. She's been from LA. And Sally takes great delight in telling her that Alia has arranged for her to go to the awards. Carla's like, "You're not paid to think."
No. Sally tells Alia, "You're not paid to think."
Yes, sorry,
And says, "Should I phone Carla? Should I phone the award people up and tell them that a member of staff had ideas above their station?" And Carla kind of thinks it's hilarious that Sally's being such a cow, but she says, "Like, leave me alone."
I think that this relationship between Alia and Sally is great, because it's good to see both of them get put in their place sometimes.
It is, actually.
Sally having them muscling because she kind of thinks that she was second in command, and now she's clearly not. So it's always good to see Sally get put in her place, because she's such a snob. And then Alia as well. It's nice to see Sally be snobby at her. And also, because we're still not warming to Alia that much, it's kind of good to see.
Yeah.
To see her getting things wrong and everything. And then Carla's just lording it over them all.
Yep. So on Friday, back come... We want to call them the Tinkers.
We wrote Tinkers first. Tinkers come back from their honeymoon.
I think Kirk Tinker. He's more of a Tinker than a Sutherland.
Well, he's closer to Beth than he is to Maria, I'll give him that.
So they come back to a huge rainstorm. They go to work together. They're still very much... in love, and then there's a bit where they come back late and pretend the house is flooded, and Carla says, "No, I'll let you off as a wedding gift." And
Have they just been away to this hotel?
Yeah. No. They went to the donkey sanctuary.
Have they? Oh, no wonder they came back so quickly then.
Yeah. So Carla's sarky to Alia about what happened the other day, and Sally's loving it. And then Sally goes and tells, they're talking in the Rovers, I guess, about Roy to Roy about Carla blowing off the awards ceremony, and Yasmin comes in and tells Roy that she has to be doing the community service.
Ta-dam, community service.
Yes.
That's good. We didn't even consider that, did we? When we were...
I think we did.
Did we? I thought we were saying about scrubbing graffiti or anything, but I suppose it makes perfect sense for him to be next door. But he's been just spending the rest of the evening.
Such perfect sense that I don't believe that would actually happen in real life, because it's actually perfect. And
do people do community service at the community centre?
You wouldn't know, would you?
I would not.
You've never been to a community centre and you've never had a community service. So.
No. I suppose, I know when Yasmin was so pleased to have Roy, because I mean, if she's signed up to have people do community service there, I'd rather have Roy than.
It will make for a few interesting storylines if they keep up that idea.
Yeah, I just like the idea that Yasmin's now going to be the boss of Roy.
Yeah.
Because he got so fed up with her thinking that she was taking over the cafe when she was putting her little books there, and now she's actually going to be able to boss him around. But he's not going to know what to do either, because he thinks he deserves to be bossed around. So, I think...
Well, he thinks it's not a good enough punishment.
Yeah, maybe he's just saying that to get away from Yasmin. He wants... I don't know what he wants. He says, oh, it needs to be something that's more tailored to my...
skill.
No, he wants something that's more tailored to suit his, things that would be bad for him, like his own personal hell he's looking for, like removing railway tracks or cooking at McDonald's or something.
Community service isn't about punishment, though. It's about rehabilitation. I think he's totally misunderstood.
Yeah, he doesn't understand that. No. Or maybe he should just go to like a real cricket club and teach proper cricket to people. That's what he should do. Something sporty. He wouldn't like that.
No, he wouldn't.
Or maybe go to a book burning.
Community book burning.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Anyway, so that is still to come in the future, I hope. So he goes and tells... he goes and finds Carla, doesn't he? And he's quite uppity about the fact that she's turning down this award ceremony. I don't know why he got such in a tiz about it. He's saying, oh, you've earned this award, people are celebrating you, you should do about it. And they almost have a bit of an argument there. But he arranges to meet up with her later about something or other. They just have the scene later, don't they, where Carla comes in and they have a nice little Roy and Carla moment, which are always nice, and she tells him she's going to the awards. She changed her mind in the end, and he says, well, I'll do my community service. So that's where we're left with that one.
Well, Michelle's the one that tells him that she should go to the awards, and then... everyone gets sort of excited about it when she says to the factory girls, oh, I'm going to the awards ceremony, who's coming with me?
Yeah, she decides actually, because everyone's telling her, and I suppose she's realising, yeah, actually, I do deserve that award. Why do you think she actually blew it off in the first place?
Because she thought it was a load of crap, really. Well, Alia ends up having to book a minibus because there's a free bar, so all the factory people want to go.
Yeah, so factory outing to the Northwest Fashion Trade Awards. What could go wrong?
Idea.
Yes, what could go wrong? Luke, Maria, what did they actually do?
I don't actually know what they did.
It's all to do. It was just to do with him meeting Liam, when I kind of assumed that they'd met anyway.
Well, okay, let's just say Luke gets kicked out in the mornings because Maria doesn't want to confuse Liam, and Steph says, you know, that you're just a toy boy and you're going to get dumped eventually. And so she then tells Luke later in the week, Maria does, that she wants him to get to know Liam. So Liam tries to bribe Luke tries to bribe Liam with a football, and then they play together and he kicks it into the road. Liam runs into the road and nearly dies.
Drama.
And Maria scoops him up and says, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine. But then she doesn't want to go for a coffee with Luke. So... Don't try to kill children, because the mums get really weird about it.
Yeah, so yet again, this relationship is crawling, edging its way forward.
Across broken glass.
They better blooming stay together after all this.
I don't care.
Like, oh my gosh, I do not care about it.
They're just not suited.
I don't think they're not suited, and Luke's fine and Maria's fine. It's just deadly dull. It's like just either get together or don't. And then have a proper storyline. Getting together isn't really a storyline, unless there's something that's like controversial or whatever.
Unless they're two major, really important, interesting characters, I don't care if they get together or not.
Yeah, I mean, Deb and Julie getting together took less time than this, didn't it?
Let me just explain to Coronation Street what is an interesting will they won't they storyline.
Go on then.
Ross and Rachel in Friends. That was the ultimate will they won't they storyline, and it got ridiculous because they spun it out over like 10 series or whatever. So this trying to make like more than a week's worth out of these two idiots is a waste of time.
Well, I think it's because we're all kind of like, oh yeah, they probably will put them together because they want to give Maria a storyline and they want to make Luke do something because he's not really done anything for a year, so just get on with it.
Equally, it's if they don't get together, I honestly couldn't care less.
I know. Like, oh well.
Either way, just get on with it.
Maybe he'll like actually end up getting Liam killed or something.
Why not?
Push him in front of a car or something and there's some drama. I'll watch that, but...
I don't think they can really kill a child.
Yeah. Anyway, talking about crossing the road, why did the chicken cross the road? Chickens.
Why?
To go to number six to listen to some sea music.
Oh, of course.
And I was thinking this was going to be a storyline, but it wasn't, but it still is.
I still think Yasmin is being a bit of a cow, really, about how horrible she is about the chickens, considering that it was Alia that bought them.
Well, yeah, she could...
I bought somebody a present, and then the other person went on and on and on about how terrible the present was, after a while, I would begin to feel like either murdering them or killing myself.
Can she, like, get, like, eggs and sell them in the community centre or anything like that?
It's probably
like
some homegrown... kind of health and safety thing.
Maybe. Well, I thought it was all a bit... kind of carry on Monday about it. Sharif sitting there with his blanket over him and playing music, opera music, sea music with lava lamps. And it was a bit like fake and weird.
Yes, it was very strange.
And I thought it was not very well acted by them either. Yasmin, who can sometimes be over dramatic, one might say, was over dramatic with this. But it's just, I don't see the point of it apart from to provide ambience for Gail and Michael's romantic chip walk.
I don't mind silly storylines like this. They're all right, really. I just think it's a bit hammed up.
It was. That's exactly right. It was hammed up. But
hey, it's a drama.
Ham, chicken.
Just need some chips.
I haven't got any beef with that.
Oh, God.
So.
That's it. That's
character of the week. What was our character of the week? I would have to probably say, not that I've thought about it particularly, but I'm going between Steph and Michael this week, I think. I think I might say Michael as my character of the week, just because of taking the plunge, going for that romantic gesture with Gail. And he's still, despite having open-heart surgery to look, not look forward to it in his near future, he's still putting a nice brave face on it and comparing himself to a car.
Yes. Mine is... I've forgotten. I've had it in my mind. Steph, because... she just made me laugh out loud and she said she was pregnant.
Yeah, I'm pregnant.
No, she just went, yes!
That's exactly
the perfect answer to this problem in the short term.
Yeah. Steph's funny. She's ditzy but not like Eva. She got on with it. And she's great actress as well,
She does really well when she's given a bigger storyline.
Exactly.
Some of them don't.
I mean, this is her first proper storyline, isn't it, really? Because before she's just been, like, Katie's friend or behind the bar or whatever. Yeah. And she's actually involved in... Well, this is probably... That's my favourite storyline of the week.
Do you remember when they were seeming to start the storyline about Steph feeling overworked and everything? And there were a few scenes about her sort of having to miss things to go into the bistro, and it turned out that was all just some kind of elaborate plan to make Leanne the manager.
I do not remember that.
Was
that fairly recently as well?
It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, but no, we want more Steph, and we're getting it, so it's good. I'm glad that she's in with the Platts, but whether she and Gavin will stay together...
It's not even a real Platts, though.
Andy, sorry, I don't know. I do not know.
Right,
that's it. Let's go on and do a character profile. Well, we promised it this week, and here it is. The classic character profile for episode 132 is Reg Holdsworth. Why did we pick him? Well, he's been on Big Brother this week, but we'll talk more about that later, because there was certainly something to talk about there. But Reg Holdsworth, I always quite liked him when I started, because he was a proper comedy character, and when we talked through his storylines, just we'll find out that there's didn't really do very much serious. It was just basically bumbling from one romantic encounter, or what he was hoping would turn into a romantic encounter to another, and kind of perving over women and being a bit of an old lech, really. And you could have that back in Coronation Street back in those days, but I don't think he'd really fit in there. I think people might start making, I don't know, but I think it'd be a bit uncomfortable having a character like Reg in it these days, but he was good for the 90s when he was in it. A lot of the information that I got together today came from not Choropedia or Wikipedia, because they don't have very much on there about Reg Holdsworth. very useful 40 years anniversary Coronation Street book. So thank you very much for that book. So Reg Holdsworth, he was born on the 14th of March 1942 and married twice. First Veronica Hardback in 1989 and then Maureen Naylor, whose birthday is this week, in 1994. Now, Reg first appeared in 1989 on the 25th of October, and he last appeared on the 24th of November 1995. That's appeared on the main show, of course, because he did come back a couple of times for... there was an After Hours special in, 1999 that was separate to the main programme, and then he was on... The DVD special from a few years ago as well, so we can't keep away. Although after what's been happening to Ken Morley this week in Big Brother, I'm not sure whether we're going to be able to, whether we'll be seeing him in Coronation Street again or anything anytime soon. Reg appeared in 410 episodes of Coronation Street, which puts him just out of the top 100 most featured characters, but he's still very memorable nonetheless, and as we've said, he is played by Ken Morley. Now, the first thing I wanted to say was I was really surprised when he went into Big Brother last week, and the announcer says that Ken Morley used to be a primary school teacher like me. In the 60s, I had no idea about that. And
makes it sound like you were a primary school teacher in the 60s.
I'm not in the 60s, I'm like a modern day Ken Morley,
oh,
in a way.
Oh, goodness gracious me.
So it's good though, because it could mean that I could be in Coronation Street in the future still. I won't give
it's
up that dream yet.
It doesn't bar you from being in Corrie, being a teacher.
No,
and I was
only
quite
I could
surprised
act.
To see that he was also in Allo Allo, which I used to watch as a kid. And I did not realise that he was the person who played General Leopold Ron Flockenstuffen.
I don't know who that
which
is.
Which I guess you wouldn't know because he had a different accent and he's a lot younger.
Well, looking at Ken Morley's IMDb stuff, he's played quite a lot of German characters on things. Obviously, he likes doing that accent. He was in...
Obviously, he relishes the... prospect of being slightly
racist.
Xenophobic. I
think that
say.
He's
you
a Nazi. No,
allegedly.
Well, he was in Red Dwarf as well. He's he played a Nazi pilot or captain or something in a Red Dwarf episode as well. But anyway, we'll talk more about that later. So Reg Holdsworth first. So he was in Corrie in 1989, but the first thing I could find out that he really did was in 1990 when he got thrown out by his wife and he ended up sleeping in the Better Buys stock room because he used to work, I think he was the manager at the time of Better Buys, the supermarket in Corrie. And back in the 90s, the main supermarket, which is now Freshco's, used to feature quite a lot. I don't know where it was that they filmed it. That could be another Coronation Street location tour, wherever they used to film the supermarket. But they don't really have any like common outdoor sort of recurring locations now, apart from the Red Wreck, do they? Would you like to like see them go back and have more regular like supermarket kind of?
I would actually, yeah. I think it makes it feel a bit more real, doesn't it, when they go somewhere else?
Yeah, and like you have all like the members of the public walking by and everything, and I mean it is. It's a different feel. It's more realistic. You're right. I'd like to see a bit more of that. But anyway. He had been kicked out by his wife, probably for just being annoying old lech, like we said. And he's ended up moving into the corner shop flat where he irritated his landlord, Alf Roberts, because he's decided to put on a free bus to Better Buys. He got it organised, which stopped on Coronation Street. So all of the people on Coronation Street then stopped going to the corner shop for their meat and their bread and their milk, and went to Better Buys instead. So Alf evicted him, and Reg returned home to his wife. 1991, I don't know what had happened to his wife by then, but he'd started chasing after Rita, poor woman. They went tea dancing together, and he was like making his romantic intentions clear, but she was not interested at all. He tries to curry her favour by putting on a trolley dash at the supermarket and then rigged it so that she won.
That would win my heart.
I know, it would. Well, she went through with it, but everything that she got from it, she ended up donating to the hospital for Emily.
What a worthy person.
Yes, just to get away from him, I think. And meanwhile, Vera Duckworth was starting to spread a rumour that Reg and Rita were romantically involved. I know, it's scandalous.
I can't
I think, yeah, he was still living with his wife at the time as well, I think. So later that year, Reg's boss, Brendan Scott, came to Weatherfield to investigate this these accusations from Vera. And although Vera kind of backed down at the end, word of the supposed affair got through to Reg's wife, and she started divorce proceedings. So Reg was out on his ear again, back to Coronation Street, and he moved next door to Rita in number 12, the flat next door to Rita's, so she couldn't get rid of him. Also that year, how do you pronounce this Roman god's name? Bacchus, is it?
Oh, I don't know that one.
He was dressed up as Bacchus. It's like the god of plenty or something.
Oh, yeah, god of, like, wine in plenty.
Yeah, which...
I know, I've seen it written down, but I've never known how to pronounce it.
Yeah, he dressed up as him. There was a Weatherfield carnival.
Can you imagine him dressed as that, actually?
Yes, you don't even need to see the picture. He was, yeah, there with all, and all the beautiful women kind of falling off of his arms as well, probably under much duress. And, yeah, his Better By Float was based on the Horn of Plenty, which is also quite suitable for him because he had plenty of horn.
Oh my gosh.
but he refused to pay the bill to Angie Friedman, who designed it. I'd like to see the Weatherfield Carnival resurrected.
Nice, yeah, little, me too, why not?
Community, maybe that could be a little job that Yasmin could do.
Yasmin can sort it out, she can get Roy to...
Summer Weatherfield Carnival, and we can have a Roy's Rolls float. And now we've got so many businesses, we can have an Underworld float, with, like, the knickers flying and Rovers float and streetcars float. I think I'd like to see that. More community stuff.
Yeah, more.
1992. Now, the cabin that year was burgled twice in the middle of the night, and Red jumped on the chance to comfort Rita, but he was gutted when, instead of falling into his arms, she started dating toffee salesman Ted Sullivan. And Reg tried to dig the dirt on Ted to try and, like, put her off of him. And he discovered that Ted's last wife died in mysterious circumstances, and Ted inherited a ton of cash. Although that didn't put Rita off.
No.
Would it have put you off to find out that the person that you're dating has got wads of money? Would that make you even keener?
I don't know if it is a put off, honestly.
I think it was, like, insinuating that Ted had killed his ex-wife anyway. This is where Rita's load of money comes from, because Ted ended up dying of a brain tumour or something not long afterwards. I think he knew that he was on his way out then, and he ended up leaving it all to Rita, and that's why Rita's rolling in it.
Rita's rolling.
Yes.
1993, Reg's first love, Maureen Naylor, she got hired to work on the tills at Better Buy. And 24 years ago, her mum, Maud, had broken up Maureen and Reg, so Reg decided to rekindle their passion.
Yeah, Maud was a bit of a character. She was an old cranky woman in a wheelchair, and she did not like the idea of Reg. No, she saw him for what he was and thought he wasn't good enough for her daughter, which he probably wasn't, but it didn't stop them.
No. Well, Reg lured Maureen into his waterbed in one of Corrie's most memorable comedic scenes.
Yes.
And it went a bit wrong, because Derek was drilling into the ceiling in the room below, and somehow managed to drill all the way through the ceiling, through the section between the floors, and up through the floorboards. Not just through the floorboards, but also through the bottom of the bed.
I hope
piercing it and puncturing.
Yeah, I think if they had sturdier ceilings, that Rita might have stood a chance on the tram crash down on that place a few years ago as well.
Step up what they build.
Anyway, that was a funny comedy scene, wasn't it? That's often on the clip shows, and they're going up there, and the water's falling out everywhere. Maureen's like going, "Oh, who are these people coming into our room?" And then apparently there's a story as well that
this goes to show you what kind of person
Ken Morley is. Yeah, apparently the water was cold and he'd hoped that it had been warm for the scene. So he apparently got his own back on the production team for doing this by standing up and letting his towel drop down in front of them, and he didn't have anything underneath. So he flashed the production team.
What a punishment.
Yeah, seeing his shriveled up old man bits.
This was in 1993 as well.
I know.
He's
even more shriveled now, probably.
He threatened to take Maureen away from Maud if she tried to come between them again, and secretly tried to get her put into a home.
Mm-hmm. Now, that year as well, Alf decided to sell the corner shop up, and Reg offered him £5,000 less than the asking price, because he was a bit of a chancer and he got turned down flat, basically. And instead, Brendan Scott, if you remember, was Reg's boss at Better Buys, ended up buying it himself. But at least that did mean for Reg that he was promoted to area manager. Brendan didn't do so well in charge of the corner shop. He died of overwork of a heart attack after a few months, and his widow offered Reg first refusal of the shop. So rather than learning from his lessons from last time, Reg made another insultingly low offer, and so she's like, no, I'm going to put it up for auction, tough luck. So Reg then had to like whine her and dine her and grovel to her, which of course Maureen walked in on, called off her engagement to Reg because they were engaged by this point. And then she went off, got drunk, and slept with Curly, who we haven't mentioned so far in the character profile, but there was always a really good double act between Reg and Curly at Better Buys and later Furman's Freezers, with Curly being the more intelligent one, but always having to, like, well, for a lot of the time, play second fiddle to Reg's incompetent, useless boss. So that's quite good that she went up and slept with him. Had a bit of drama.
Drama.
1994, he threatened to resign from Better Buys because Maureen was told she was going to be made redundant. And unsurprisingly, Better Buy readily accepted his resignation. I think he thought that he was more value than he actually was, I suppose.
That's a bit embarrassing.
So he used his redundancy money to buy the corner shop. So he's in charge at last. And I think that's how I remember it. When I first started watching it, Reg was in charge of the corner shop. So that year in 1994, Reg and Maureen got married, but then fell out straight away because Reg argued with Maureen's brother about who was going to be looking after Maud. But anyway, the pair moved into number 12 together, but Maud was still scheming to try and split them up. By pretending that her house had had a break-in, so Maureen went to stay with her for a little bit. Reg then left the shop in Maureen's hands, the corner shop, when he started running Furman's Freezers, but she couldn't cope and had a breakdown. So the following year, 1995, saw another quite famous Reg moment when he bought a toupee to make himself look younger. Basically, I think by this time, well, all the way through, the producers were just like making fun of Ken Morley, just seeing what silly things they could make him do as Reg. It was all because an American firm was interested in buying Furman's Freezers, and Reg was kind of worried that he'd be made redundant or whatever from there, so he wanted to make himself look younger. But the buyout fell through anyway. He still kept his wig. He also took part in an identity parade that year, because there was a story about a red wreck flasher, and he was called up to be on the identity parade. I don't think he was suspected of it, but the woman who was doing the parade picked him out as being the red wreck flasher, and the police agreed and thought, well, this wig that he's wearing must be part of the disguise. But he ended up burning his wig in frustration. Luckily for him, Phyllis Pierce ended up getting flashed by the real flasher, so Reg was let off in the end. And that was Reg's last storyline, because late in 1995, he got a promotion, again, left Weatherfield for Lowestoft, promising Maureen that their marriage could survive. But alas, it did not, because in 1996, Maureen discovered that Reg had resigned from his job and had run off with Yvonne Bannister, a rich heiress. And he also got her pregnant as well. At a quite old age.
Don't think about that.
He does still have it in him. So yeah, they ended up getting divorced, Maureen and Reg, and that was the end of them. So that was the last that we saw of Reg Holdsworth on the street itself. But he did make a couple of returns, like I said before, Rover's returns. By 1999, he was working at a cash and carry in Calais. That's a bit of a tongue twister. So in 1999, they had this after-hours spin-off, which was, I think it was on for a week or so at 9 or 10 o'clock at night or something. And it was a way that ITV were trying to get more people tuning into their channel in the evening. And they brought back Reg Holdsworth and Bette Lynch, and also Bette's granddaughter Vicky, to have these little adventures in Brighton and Calais. So Reg was there working in Calais, having an affair with his assistant there. Because Steve and Vikram were on it as well. They'd like gone on a booze cruise over to Calais. Reg ends up basically getting drunk, ends up in Vikram's van, and when they return to Brighton, which is where Bette and Vicky were, he rolls out the back of the van, and ends up getting embroiled in Bette's problems, because she'd been going out with this guy called Bruce, who just died. And he had a massive boat, and Reg had to pretend to be Bruce so they could sell the boat or something. I don't remember. I watched it when it was on. It wasn't wasn't amazing. But apparently he signed up for it, or Judy Goodyear signed up to it because the scripts were so amazing. But I don't think they were. Do you think they should do anything like that again? Because
no.
They do things like that on Hollyoaks, I hear they do After Hours ones. I don't think they particularly need to, because when this was on, it wasn't like it was full of swearing or nudity or anything.
You don't need another show.
I think back then, I mean,
complicates things.
It did complicate things. It's like the DVD specials when they mention those as well. But like, already what goes on Coronation Street is pretty racy, especially compared to, well, in 1999 it was kind of starting to get there, I suppose, but it doesn't need it. And it also means that we'd have to do even more talking on the podcast.
Exactly.
I don't think I could cope with that many episodes in a week.
No.
He also, bizarrely, apparently appeared in an Emmerdale VHS spin-off that year called Don't Look Now, The Dingles in Venice. And I couldn't find any information about what he actually did there, but he was actually in role as Reg Holdsworth in Emmerdale.
So we've had confirmation that they do exist within the same universe.
Exactly, it's all the same. Well, and EastEnders must do as well, because do you remember on Comet Relief, was it, or Children in Need a few years ago, there was a Coronation Street EastEnders crossover?
I don't think Children in Need is canon.
Is it not?
But
it's straight to video Avondale spin-offs, definitely.
It is. In 2010, he appeared in a Knight's Tale DVD as Sir Reg Holdsworth at Tatlock Towers, when Mary tries to seduce Norris by taking him on a trip there.
Yeah, so this was like a DVD that was like a 15th anniversary from the beginning of the first DVD, which is like a Caribbean cruise one, I think, that was set in Tatlock Towers, named after Albert Tatlock. And Reg was brought back into it again, so was Curly. And it also had Rosie going off to do some modelling there. And Curly was the director of the company that runs Tatlock Towers. Now, this was, I can't remember when Curly left, but it must have been only a few years before that. But by then, he'd already split up with Emma, which is great, because Curly can now come back without having his boring wife in tow. But anyway, on the DVD, Curly fired Reg when a wild boar brought in for the evening's feast was still frozen solid when it was time to be cooked. And it was a nice little role reversal having Curly in charge of him. So Norris told Reg that Mary was loaded, because he was fed up of Mary kind of trying to seduce him and whatever. She's not really gone after Norris at all anymore, does
no,
she? Back then she was
bad about it.
She was well horny for Norris. So Reg thinks, well, I'm in there if Mary's got a load of money, and proposed to her. Norris ended up feeling guilty, though, about saying this, and went to warn her about Reg. So Reg and Norris ended up going head-to-head in a medieval tournament, like they were doing jousting and stuff. And although he wins, Reg is rejected by Mary when he finds out that she's just as penniless as he is.
Why does he reject her if she hasn't got any money?
Oh no, Mary rejects him. I haven't seen this, I'm just copying down what I read. Mary rejects Reg when she finds out that he's just as penniless as she is. Or
okay.
The other way around,
whatever.
I don't remember.
They don't
get it on, basically.
No. And at the end, Reg and Curly drive off to the sunset together.
Yeah, so that's the last, and I think that's quite a nice way to leave Reg and Curly, because they were this double act through the 90s, and who knows what harebrained schemes they're getting up to.
Now, this is Ken Morley talking about himself. An archetypical Burke, instantly recognisable by all the people he'd ever worked for as a little twerp. Self-love was one of his main foibles. Oh, that is him talking about Reg.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I thought he was talking about himself there.
No, he is not. He is talking about Reg. He says, everyone has had an annoying, horrible boss. I think lots of people have had useless bosses.
Yeah, yeah. And he ended up having roles in Red Dwarf after Corrie. He was in Hardware with Martin Freedom, Benidorm. He was in Safe Style UK double glazing adverts, which plagued the nation.
They still do, don't they? Those Safe Style UK adverts. It's him and Cannon and Ball. You buy one, you get one free.
They're definitely catering to a certain type of person there, aren't they?
Yeah.
I've never bought any double glazing in my life.
Apparently Sales Style UK is like totally rips you off.
Well, he's also been in a few celebrity programmes like Celebrity Fit Club, where he lost 2 stone, and Celebrity MasterChef last year, and he's also, I don't know, he was also in Big Brother this year.
He was also
apparently
in Big Brother this year.
Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, looking back on Reg, I suppose that there was a little bit of crossover with him and Fred Elliott, but I don't think like two of them could have been in the programme at once, because they were both kind of a bit loved up old.
Was he likeable? Was he supposed to be likeable?
I don't He wasn't, like, nasty. He wasn't a villain or anything. He was supposed to be, like, people find him really annoying and people enjoyed seeing him get his comeuppance and getting into silly scrapes. But
it's kind of a bit Norrisy.
Yeah, exactly. He was a bit Norrisy. But then Fred came along, kind of shop owner, going after the ladies. And I don't think Coronation Street really needed two characters like him. And Fred was a lot more lovable as well. But I suppose in the corner shop, there's still Deb and there's... there's elements of Reg and Dev, I suppose, like being a bit of a womanizer. So, legacy lives on. So, we'll talk. I'm sure we'll talk more about Reg in a minute when we go into the cabin because he's been
there's
a big brother.
Things, yeah.
Certain things to talk
Ken
about.
Ken Morley has not Ken... Reg. Although, if you told me he was in a character as Reg Holdsworth, I don't think I would have been surprised. Right, should we move on to the news?
Yes. So before we got onto the main news of the evening, the big talking points, just a quick plea to vote for Coronation Street in the All About Soap Awards. Allaboutsoap.co.uk, it's a magazine that you can get over here. They seem, I don't know how many categories they've got, but there's only one that you can vote for online, which is the best soap moment of 2014. And there's like 30, 40 nominations for it. And each soap's got seven each, I think. But it's worth entering if you do so before the 6th of February when it closes, because you can go, you could maybe win an iPad mini 16 gig one. I don't know if that's just people in the UK, but vote for Corrie anyway. So this is what All About Soap reckoned were the top seven moments of Coronation Street. Callum reveals all. Not really.
What?
This is what they said was one of the best Corrie moments that you could pick
okay.
from. I don't think so. Hayley dies. Yeah, I'll give them that. Tina murdered. Give them that, yeah. Robin Tracy's wedding. Yeah, that's quite good. Save Eccles.
And what?
Well, I had to think, I had to think about what it was, but that was when Tracy was going to put Eccles down because Amy had said that she bit Simon. I don't think that one's going to win. We've got Rob confessing all to Carla, which is kind of all tied in with the Tina murder and the wedding day anyway, I would have thought. And then final nomination is Steve and Michelle look at the stars.
I don't understand what that means.
Didn't...
Is it a metaphor?
Weren't they looking at the stars when... Norris got his stargazing app and they were like they were going to maybe get back together and then Steve goes inside or something.
Were they drunk when they wrote this?
There are better moments in 2014 than these. I mean, there's nothing to do with like the Phelan storyline or I don't know. I mean, we've just been talking about it on the awards show, but it's a pretty poor list. But
I tell you what they should do next time they want to prepare a list like this is get someone who's watched the show to do it.
Yeah, that would be a pretty good idea to start, wouldn't it? But Hayley dying and Tina murder is in
yeah,
there,
that's
so
fair enough. Yeah,
I haven't actually voted yet.
So you can go on to allaboutsoap.co.uk to register your votes for the nominations for the best moment of 2014.
Go Corrie. So, the big news of the night then, Ken Morley has been kicked out of Celebrity Big Brother before he even got a chance to be evicted. He was up for eviction this week, wasn't he? There was a face-to-face vote on, was that on Saturday, I think? And
he wanted people
to vote for him because he's like giving thumbs up.
Okay, so he received 233 complaints for, and he was kicked out for unacceptable and offensive language. And partially it was down to being very pervy towards the women.
Yeah, he was saying that he's kept wanting to go into the bathroom to look at women's asses, apparently, and he didn't see anything wrong with saying any of this. And he was getting told by all the women that you can't say that, it's not fair, get away from me. But he just didn't seem to get it, did he?
I think his argument was probably along the lines of, you wouldn't mind if a nice-looking bloke said this to you, so why can't I say it?
Yeah, Andy was saying, well, you're walking around with hardly any clothes on and some of you are glamour models anyway, but...
Which is just, like, the worst...
Yeah.
Excuse
It was
ever.
So cringy.
But really, it was down to his racist comments that he's made...
Yeah, except, I mean, we were discussing it at the time, and it wasn't like he was being purposefully offensive to the black people in there, was it? He was just using certain words.
He was using words very flippantly that are very outdated and offensive, and he was told by somebody not to use that word, and he used it again. He was told directly, face-to-face, by Alexander not to use that word, and...
Yeah.
He argued with him that it was acceptable to use that word, which is a no-no. And then he got told by Big Brother not to say it.
A couple of days later, he
said
it
again. And he also told a girl that she should have allowed a man to grope her breast because he was a Jewish film producer. which I didn't know that they were allowed to. Is there some kind of like law that they're allowed to
I
do
can't
that?
Believe that he was saying it. He just wasn't getting it as well. He was saying these things and people saying, you can't say that. I can't believe you're telling me this.
You could have probably said it in the 60s.
I think that was, a lot of it.
But he also, we're not in the 60s now.
He told one woman that he wanted her to go in violently.
No, he asked her whether she would, and she said, she laughed at him.
Make love to one of the other people. And that one, she said, well, I'm glad it's me you're saying this can do, because a lot of women would have got really offended by that.
You would, if you want drama, you look this up, because he's just showed himself up ridiculously.
He got into loads of arguments as well with Perez Hilton as well, who has gone right down in my estimation. I didn't really care much about. I know who Perez Hilton was, being a celebrity blogger, but he was so annoying this week. And he's just such a drama queen, wasn't he?
Yeah, crybaby extraordinaire. Yeah.
But Ken Morley, he's just been an
horrible.
I would say a disgrace to Coronation Street, but I think he's far enough removed from Coronation Street now that luckily he's not.
I think one of the things, though, people are saying he's racist and stuff. I mean, he might very well be, but I think there is a massive difference between using an offensive and outdated word to somebody and being racist. I think there is a difference. And I think that if you're accusing him of being racist based on that, I think you're being a bit unfair. Well, and also completely confusing the issue.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, he was saying, sort of being rude about people's backgrounds as well, though, wasn't he? Because he was making lots of comments about the fact that there were so many Americans in the house, putting that in a negative
light.
You're
allowed to be racist against white people.
And then there was...
fine.
Who was it that asked where she came from? And she's like, oh... My dad was from London and my mum was from Ireland or something, and he was like saying, oh, you poor person, and he's just horrible to her. And
he is horrible. He's a horrible person, but I don't... Anyway, so he's on Loose Women, which is...
Yeah, once he was out, because he didn't have an interview with Big Brother.
So this was the show that one of the people that's in Big Brother used to be on, isn't it? Nadia's...
She used to be on?
I don't know. Anyway.
It used to be presented by Sherry Houston, who played Maureen Holdsworth. I assume she's not on it anymore.
So he went on to Loose Women to defend himself, and he said, with Alexander, we were discussing terminology in the Americas. In the Americans? Well, and I said, Martin Luther King used a word to define what a black man was in America in the 60s, and the American army now use that word. It is outdated, granted. Of course, I'm sorry. I don't want to upset people. The programme says there'll be nasty language. Alexandra and I were having discussions, and I said, am I a honky? And then we talked about what black guys say to each other in America. At the end of it, he burst out laughing. We were joking. It was banter in an odd situation, but I understand entirely if it upsets a lot of people all over the world. And I apologise for upsetting you, and I hope that you accept I am not a racist. Mm.
He did say when he was going into Big Brother, I haven't watched Big Brother before, I don't know what it's like. I mean, had he heard of the Jade Goody incident, which was, how long ago was that? Like 10 years ago or so, when that whole thing came up when she was, and that was, from what I didn't watch it, but that really did come across as being very racist, what Jade Goody was doing, because she was like personally insulting one of the other, that was an Indian lady that was there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Blimey.
I think, it's easy for me to say, because I'm white and racism doesn't affect me in the same way, but he wasn't being racist, he was just being ignorant and stupid and offensive, and that is enough really to be kicked out. And don't ever, if someone says to you, find out uncomfortable, please don't say that. Don't say or do it. And that is the thing that got him kicked out, because time and time again, he showed himself to be completely incapable of respecting people's wishes in how they should be treated or spoken to. If you can't play by someone's rules, just don't talk to them.
He wouldn't accept people coming up to him to try and tell him. He just completely isolated himself for the rest of the group, for the whole of the half week that he was in there. He wanted to be kicked out. He wanted to be left alone, kind of.
He wanted his money and go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, he said, oh, well, people are paid different amounts. This is, again, on Loose Women. Whether you get paid or not is not of interest to me in terms of what happens now. What does make a difference is what you've not seen. TV edits the bits that they don't want you to see, which is true. And that's the thing that people have been saying about Big Brother from the beginning. They show bits that paint people in certain light. And who knows what he said when the cameras weren't on him, or the cameras are on him all the time, but what was cut? Because there was this other argument between him and Cammy Lee there, where he said some more derogatory remarks to her, and he says that that's because she came round and bit his ear, and he's like, why'd you do that? And she said, oh, because you like it. But they didn't show any of that, apparently. So I don't know. I mean...
I don't see how she would have got in trouble if she'd done that.
But not if they were particularly trying to paint Ken Morley as being a horrible racist pervert.
I don't care. I having had men perv like that over me before, it's horrible, and you can't. And it just makes a horrible atmosphere, and I wouldn't want to live in a house with somebody like that. It's horrible.
No, he's not the sort of person that you want to share a house with.
People just need to understand, like, there's a certain guy that doesn't get this. Like, it's okay for some people to act a certain way around you, but you're not one of those people.
Mm.
And you can't get upset about it because you're old and say, oh, you just don't like me perving over you because I'm old. That's not fair. That's like saying, oh, why am I not allowed to hug your mum? Because she's not your bloody mum, you idiot. There's certain boundaries between people. And if somebody puts a boundary up, leave him alone.
Mm.
Well, I did say at the time when he went in, I didn't like him. And I was trying to be fair and saying, oh, well, I just didn't like the way he portrayed himself. And now I'm taking it all back. Now I don't like him.
Yeah. Well, it was quite drama. We didn't even usually watch Celebrity Big Brother. We usually watched the opening night. But then we heard, because somebody else got kicked out, didn't they, on Saturday. So, we'll watch Sunday's show. And then we just got hooked in from them because of he was, like, digging himself a bigger and bigger hole. But I don't know whether he'll come out of this or not. I mean, he probably doesn't care either. I mean, he's got
his money now. Bugger off.
Yeah, but sad, really. But anyway.
In a way or not, yeah. I don't know.
But that's not even the biggest drama of the week. But we'll come back to...
There's Cabin Extra.
There's a Cabin Extra later, which some might say is even bigger.
Right, the Cabin Extra, if you're worried about spoilers, the Cabin Extra is about a character who will be returning... so if you're worried about storylines, it doesn't really give away a storyline or any of anything like that. It's just a character that's coming back, so you might want to listen to it even if you don't like spoilers.
There's drama,
epic. Well beyond anything that was in the show this week.
Well, let's get through our feedback and then we'll get on to that then.
Feedback section. It's feedback time.
Yes, thank you to everyone who heard our pleas last week for feedback. We did get some this week, so thank you very much, including a couple of comments that popped up on Facebook today. First from Reagan, who says, the Beth Kirk wedding was great, but I wanted Maria to make a few sarcastic comments to her parents, who obviously prefer Kirk. They show up for his wedding, but not hers. Yeah, you know, I mean, Kirk was pretty blessed that parents came to the wedding, because most people's parents on Coronation Street don't come to the wedding.
Well, neither do brothers or sisters.
But yeah, I mean... Deirdre didn't come to Tracy's wedding, but...
Right, Christina said, I have been more excited by the fake Gavin storyline than I have been by any storyline in a while. I was a bit gutted at the reason behind the deception. I was expecting something more dramatic, but I suppose this is more realistic.
That's a bit like what we said earlier, isn't it? I wouldn't say that I've been excited by this storyline, but I've been really, really interested by it. It's been one of my favourite ones at the moment.
I think it was more of a case of what's he doing this for and why and how's he going to get out of it. And I think, unfortunately, they have let themselves down in the whole why.
Mm, but it's got some great characters in it. I mean, I like Michael, I like Gail, I like Steph now. Andy is an intriguing character, so I'm enjoying watching it. And the big revelation that Andy was not actually Gavin a couple of months ago, that was exciting. But they let it go for that a week after that. But
I think I have this feeling that if Andy becomes a sort of long-term character, which I don't expect he will do at the moment, I would imagine, say he's in for like 5 years or whatever, if we do a character profile on him, we'll be like, now, I forgot that he was introduced originally as Michael's fake son, because I can just imagine that after this storyline is over and done with, they will drop it like a ton of bricks and it will never be mentioned again.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know how long he's going to stay in it for. No. But anyway, so a couple of emails then. First one from Karen, and we don't usually give surnames. This is Karen Flanagan, and I'm going to have to try really hard not to Flanagan voice for this.
Right.
No, I won't. Hello, Karen. She says, brilliant podcast. I've been listening since November 2014, and I'm properly hooked. Love the way you sometimes banter on about Corrie nonsense, like a proper married couple.
We've got a certificate and everything.
I too am thoroughly enjoying Amy at the moment. I literally lolled when Norris and Rita came round to number one to invite Ken to the Rovers on New Year's Eve, and Amy proceeded to do the very creepy thing with her hair on her already pale face. Hilarious. And she also sent us a real-life Corrie story for us and some photos, didn't she?
Yeah.
She went to see Charlie Lawson in 2012, who played Jim McDonald, of course. She said, he's one of my all-time favourite characters. Turns out it was my husband and I in an auditorium full of mostly pensioners. Well, it turns out Charlie was rather happy to see me and quite attentive as it goes. I think the attached picture sums it up. Which you can't see on the podcast.
You can't see them, but Karen is a looker, so...
Charlie was happy. When do
we
get to meet Coronation Street people is what
they
I want to know.
They would be happy to see us. Right, David, he emailed us and he said, I'm really enjoying the podcast. Thanks for the effort you put into it. I've not read it in a while, so I thought I'd send you an email. I agree, Kirk and Beth's wedding was great. It played out exactly how I hoped it would. The 80s costumes were fun. One small correction for you. You said in the podcast Julia was dressed as a pop star. However, I believe she was supposed to be Molly Ringwald as an 80s teen actress.
I don't know who Molly Ringwald
she was,
is.
Yeah, well, he says she was famous for doing a bunch of John Hughes films. Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club.
Oh, you've seen The Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen
that. Well, I knew... Yeah, I remember her saying that she was Molly Ringwald.
Oh.
There was lots of fun going on. Mary and Julie, the three Madonnas, Tinkers and Dev, Marie and Kirk's parents. I think the writers are better than they have been in a long, long time.
Well, I think it would have been quite difficult to get Beth and Kirk's wedding wrong, to be honest.
They nearly did.
With what? With
them melodrama.
Not turning up, but yeah. Anyway. Thankfully, that was kept to the minimum, wasn't it?
Although Tracy has never been one of my favourites, I like her and Beth's relationship. It's a nice change for Tracy and lets her show a bit of a softer side. I hope they keep that up.
Yes, I've liked Tracy's softer side recently. I agree with that.
And let me be clear. I love Beth and Craig, Sinead, Chesney and Kirk. They are one of my favourite families on the street. I do not share your love for the new Tinkers. They were okay, however, if they don't make another appearance, I will not be upset about it. I find it hard to believe that Sinead is a member of that family. Those three make Beth look like British upper class.
I think that's why I like them so much. And it is my love for the Tinkers that he's not sharing, because you were kind of a bit cool on them anyway, weren't you? You didn't really care. I think that Sinead fits right in with them.
I just would have preferred it if they'd all been dizzy, funny, silly...
I suppose they're a bit more kind of common,
nasty.
Not chavvy than Beth is. If they'd have been a bit dizzier, yeah, maybe you're right. But no, I think they're great, and I hope we'll see them again. But who knows? Sinead needs to have an actual storyline first, so we'll see. And okay, we'll round the feedback section off with Tibor's email of the week, who says that last week was really good, apart from a few niggling annoyances. You're right about Beth's family not ever meeting Kirk. Yeah, we said that it was odd that... They mistook Jason for him when they'd been going out for a year and a half. I can't believe that nobody has ever sent them a picture. Surely Beth would have shouted it from the rooftops and sent selfies of she and Kirk to everyone she knows, especially when they got engaged. Yes, absolutely. I thought it was the best Corrie wedding ever. I laughed, I cried, and I cursed. Okay, that part wasn't fun. Irresponsible Michelle and Liz both leaving the pub knowing there's an important event, and Maria blowing hot and cold on Luke again. Make it stop! Best Corrie wedding ever. That's high praise. It's very different. It's memorable. I think it's up there.
It's going to go down.
It's up there.
History books.
Yes. I think Roy was going to make the wedding cake, but after his troubles, Julie stepped in. I'm surprised Billy didn't text Sean to say something came up and he'd get there when he could.
That would have been the polite thing to have done.
Yes. Kirk invited his parents by text. Why wouldn't Beth have made sure they were sent an invitation like everyone else? It was quite funny when Sally was trying to make excuses for missing the wedding and Beth's mother referred to them as being the same age, and later pointed out that Sally's excuse about traffic didn't hold water as she had her top on back to front. There were lots of mini little storylines and moments in the wedding, weren't there, that were
we
like all
the bit
added
when
together.
The glass fell on the floor and the... Beth's
oh yeah, we didn't mention that in the podcast last week, did
mum
we?
Or Gran. Said, oh, that was me.
Yeah.
And it was so obviously like an outtake that they just left in.
It seemed to be. Let us know if anyone else has seen that and has seen that. So her nan's sitting in a booth. She knocks the glass over on her way out. And it seemed like it's like she was walking away from the boom or something and said, oh, that was me. As if it was not in the script. It was weird.
I thought that was funny.
That was funny. We liked that bit. But yeah, we did our character profile on Kurt last week, and Tibor says she always liked him. He's never been that sharp, but he's always been as loyal as his dogs, and he's been much more kind, honest, and generous than most men on the street. There's not a nasty bone in his body. And she also sent us a picture of her meeting Andy Wyman as well.
Wow.
Everyone's meeting Coronation Street.
Yes.
People. So that is it for the podcast, apart from our cabin extra. So if you don't want to listen to the spoilers, and we'll talk about this and maybe a few other things might get thrown in as well. But if you'd like to stop listening there but still contact us, then you can do so by emailing us at conversationstreet@gmail.com or leaving a comment on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com. Leave us a Skype message, leave us a Facebook message, or you can even tweet us. We're at conversationstreet. So let's move on to Cabin Extra. So, there's been a bit of behind-the-scenes drama in Coronation Street yesterday, and a lot of intrigue as well. Now, we've known for a little while that Sarah Louise is going to be coming back to Coronation Street soon, which I'm really looking forward to because I used to like her. And also in tow is going to be Bethany. And we've said a couple of times on the podcast about what's Bethany going to be like. Are they going to have the same actress? I mean, probably not, but are they going to have her as like a sexy Italian teen or whatever? And yesterday, the casting was announced. We kind of made jokes about the fact that she's going to be played by some 20-year-old or something. But no, she's actually being played by a 25-year-old.
Allegedly.
Who knows? We have evidence to suggest that.
Yeah.
It's all a bit weird because the actress is called Katie Redford, and if you look at pictures of her and Bethany, you could kind of say, okay, maybe that's what Bethany grows up into. They're not dissimilar, but maybe not right now because Bethany is supposed to be 14 at the moment. And this Katie Redford on ITV's publicity says she's 19. That's kind of pushing it a little bit. But 14 to 19, maybe you do get sometimes like 18 or 19-year-olds playing the teenagers.
Older ones will play because it gets them out of having to go around school and like restrictions on how long children are allowed to work.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather they cast people the same age, but I can understand how it works for them. But the weird thing is, she's not 19.
Also, it has been... See, this is what I keep having to say. We haven't seen a lot of this evidence. We've seen some of it.
Seen enough of it to believe it.
Right, so all signs point to the fact that she is not 19. Because apparently, people have found her Twitter account, which was at Katie Redford 89. Which would indicate, some might suggest, her date of birth.
1989.
Yeah. And also on the same account, Michael.
Yeah, there was a picture of her celebrating her 25th birthday, now removed. By the way, her new Twitter handle, if you'd like to follow her, is at Katie Redford TLC. Also, her Facebook page is still accessible to anybody. Oops. We won't tell you where that is, but you can find it if you want to. So that's some evidence. Also, some of her older tweets have been deleted, but you can, like, I think people have looked in caches or whatever. I don't really understand it, but some of her old stuff has been deleted. So, there was somebody on the Digital Spy website comment section on the article who claims to have been to university with her, so they would know. And somebody else on the forum there said that she was in his or her year at school, which but would they... apparently put her at 25, 26.
Yeah, right. And also, she used to work for a company called Dazzle and Fizz Children's Parties, and they had a... It's a cached page that you can access, which puts her age at 22.
Yeah, and that was supposed to be from last year, so who knows how old she is, really. And for your information, her favourite party animal... Party parrot, her party character to play for that company is...
Princess Dazzle.
Princess Dazzle, yeah, she makes a good Princess Dazzle. So there
she's
seems
not
to be...
playing Princess Dazzle, she's playing...
Bethany Platt. But there seems to be an awful lot of evidence to suggest that she's 25. We've also seen her CV as well, we looked up earlier, from a management company. And it says that she can play people from like 16 to 19 or something.
It's a very puzzling thing because on the one hand, it seems quite obvious that she's not 19. But on the other hand, I just don't know why they would have bothered to lie and think they could get away with it. Because we live in a world where... everybody knows everything about everyone.
Yeah, and people that know her haven't been shy about saying... But they're not being nasty about her, the people that know her. They've been saying, oh, brilliant, she's a great actress, well done. Looking forward to seeing her on the show. And I'm not being prejudiced against her or anything. Maybe she will be a great actress. I mean, Who knows?
I think it's fairly just... clear they've got a certain idea for what they want Bethany to be. They want her to be a sexy young tearaway teen.
Yeah, who'll probably end up getting pregnant before long as
maybe,
well.
Maybe, or she'll certainly be a kind of Rosie Webster kind of character. And responsibly, they decided to hire an actress who was not a 14-year-old. Yeah. It would have been unacceptable. And also, I think they're probably thinking to themselves a bit about along the lines of Nuts and Zoo and getting a, you know, Torso of the Week or whatever.
Well, is it that they want a Michelle Keegan replacement?
Yeah.
But then it'd be just a bit weird to have, like, somebody who's playing a 14-year-old character getting nominations for Sexiest Female and stuff.
It just doesn't work. I think... We said... Didn't we say we should... Bethany should come back when she's older.
Yeah, they could have let it a little bit longer.
Or retconned it properly that she's not 14.
I'm sure there are plenty of actual 14-year-old actresses that are really good. I would have moaned if somebody had come along who actually was 18 or 19. I said, oh, why didn't they have a 14-year-old? But
no,
this is just ridiculous.
What they should really have done is to retcon it so that she's 18.
That wouldn't have worked either, though, because that would have meant that Sarah Lou would have had her when she was 8.
I know, you just wouldn't mention it again. I mean, the amount of stuff that's been... It makes about as much sense as somebody completely changing their face.
Well, speaking of which, at least the age gap between Bethany and new Nick looks like it's right, because Nick looks about 10 years older than he's supposed to be as well.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, so on ITV.com, we learn a bit more about her. It says Nottingham-born Katie.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Oh, go on.
Let's just say that if you want to leave it there and not know about the plot and how she's going to be introduced and what storylines she might be involved in, you can leave us here.
Oh, we'll talk a bit more about that.
That's the drama. She is a possibly 25-year-old cast as a 14-year-old. So...
ITV.com have said Nottingham-born Katie, 19, will debut as tearaway teenager Bethany this spring when she arrives unannounced in Weatherfield from her home in Milan. She'll be followed shortly afterwards by her furious mum Sarah, played by Corrie favourite Tina O'Brien, who's determined to drag her wayward daughter back to Italy. But the pair end up staying in Weatherfield, causing more than a few headaches for Gail and the rest of the family. Now 14 years old, Bethany has been studying at an English-speaking school and has a fiery relationship with her mum and an eye for the boys. Wouldn't it just be nice to have somebody come in that's a teenager that's actually very studious and or nice or normal or whatever?
Well, so you'd like it to be like, now 14 years old, Bethany has been studying at an English-speaking school and is completely normal and average in every way and is going to get C's in her GCSEs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, so she's going to come in and rather ironically, I suppose, her first scene is apparently going to be her going into the Rovers and then... Andy. Yeah, fake Gavin got written. Andy, I think, is going to buy her a drink because he's going to think that she looks 18, but then it turns out that she's actually 14. I don't know whether that was a bit tongue-in-cheek or something, but yeah, so that's what she's going to be in. So I just can't believe that they thought that they could hide it. And the fact that they didn't tell her to look, you need to change your Facebook account now. You need to get rid of all your old tweets now. You need to make sure your friends don't say anything.
Someone might suggest, not saying this is me suggesting this, but someone might suggest that perhaps she might have maybe massaged the numbers on her CV herself, knowing that she was going for a 14-year-old.
So
job.
She told ITV
she
was
She said she was 19. And then...
She's going to be in trouble if that's true.
Well, really, if she could get away with saying she's 19 playing a 14-year-old and they didn't think anything differently, then, well, she deserves the job, doesn't she?
Do you think that she looks it? Do you think that she'd get away with it?
We had this conversation earlier and I pointed out to you that there are certain young women who are 14 who look considerably older than 14. And it all depends on what you know, your makeup and your hair and everything. And all the pictures she's got of her are her done up and stuff. But I also said that if I were to pick somebody to play a 14-year-old, I wouldn't necessarily have selected her based on the fact that she doesn't look 14. I mean, it's not to say that 14-year-olds don't look like that, because some of them do.
If you're hiring, you want to hire
a horse, you don't hire a donkey.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And say, but some horses look like donkeys, so it's okay.
Well, the fact is, there's lots of other characters on the street that people are going to compare her to. For example, Faye, who's...
85 this year.
Faye's 11 at the moment. Now Ellie Leach is 12 who plays her.
That's good. That's fair enough.
Yeah, that again. But so Bethany's supposedly going to be like 2 years older than Faye, but she's clearly not going to look it. And I wonder if they're going to be friends or whatever, and it just won't look right.
It won't look right.
And then you got Craig, and I don't know how old Craig's supposed to be, but Colson Smith at least is either 16 or 17. He did his GCSEs last year. So he's going to be a bit older than Bethany, yet Bethany is still, I think, going to look younger. Are they going to like Britney Spears her up and like put her in sexy schoolgirl outfits or something?
I remember at school there were always people, and at college as well, there were always people who just looked older than me. And I remember thinking me and all my friends looked like children, but they looked like adults already when we were at school.
I think however they make her look now, though, the fact that we know and the viewers know that that's how old she is, we're not going to be able to take it out of our heads.
No, I agree.
It'd be like if somebody had said, yeah, Ben Price is actually however old Nick's supposed 58. To be, 30, whatever, I'd be like, okay, he doesn't look it, but maybe he's just aged badly. But the fact that I know that he's like 40, whatever, I just can't get it out of my head
now,
that's not right for Nick.
The funny thing is that Tina O'Brien is 31.
Yeah.
Right, but she's playing Sarah Louise, whose character is 27.
Yeah, that's an example of bringing in a slightly older actress for the teen pregnancy storyline back in 2000, whenever.
But she's actually, Sarah Louise is actually 27 in the show.
Yeah, and I think she'll be 28 by the time she's in it.
Is apparently 25. What's gone wrong here? And
the problem is, Tina O'Brien does look quite youthful. She's aged pretty well, actually.
She's got that cute little look. This is what I mean when I say that not everyone looks their age.
Which is why it was important to cast Bethany as somebody who really did look younger, because they kind of look like sisters.
Now, don't forget, I got carded in Tesco's the other day.
Oh, yeah, you did, didn't you? That was quite... Yeah.
32, still got it.
So who else have we got that's kind of in the in-between area? Well, there's Steph, who's 19. Tisha Mary's 20 or 21. So there's going to be...
I would have said the character is more like 25.
Who?
Steph. Doesn't act young to me. She doesn't act the same age as Katie.
No.
Katie, I could believe, is 20.
Yeah, Katie's 20. Georgia May Foote's 23. So that's... These are all that Bethany is straddling the gap, Bethany and Katie Redford. So Katie McGlynn's 21, Sophie is 20, but Brooke Vincent is 22. So all of these girls, played by actresses who are younger than Bethany, are all playing characters that are going to be older than them. It's going to be weird.
It is weird.
And are they going to like make Bethany become friends with the likes of Sinead and Katie and Steph, or are they going to have her be friends with Faye? I mean, they said as well she's going to have the eye for the boys, and there aren't any teenage boys in Coronation Street apart from Craig at the moment. And Craig's great and everything, but I can't believe that a character like Bethany would give him a second glance.
No, I mean...
I hope it doesn't mean we're going to have a load more teenage boys. I don't like them and don't need them.
I feel really bad for this girl.
I know, I do. I'm not slagging her off or anything. I've been quite intrigued by the scandal.
I feel so sorry for her that I just hope she doesn't lose her job. I want to give her a chance. I don't mind. I don't care. I just think it's funny.
It is funny.
And it's stupid, but it's only stupid on the part of the Crow production team, because they could have done something about this and they could have looked a bit closely. I think if I was hiring anybody for any job, one of the first things I would do is to look at their social media accounts to see how they... It's not even about what kind of person are you. I don't like people X, Y, Z. It's more a case of how do you portray yourself to the outside world, and are you a prudent and responsible person? And if she's pretended that she's 19, she's obviously not that prudent.
Well, I don't know whether Corey believed that she's 19 or not. I can't believe it, because it was so easy to find out that she wasn't.
Well, this is, yeah.
It was so short-sighted of Coronation Street.
We can go round in circles here. This poor girl's been hired, and I don't want her to get sacked before she even gets a chance. This is her quote about being on Corey. She said, "Until I'm actually on set, I genuinely don't think it will sink in that I'm joining the cast of Coronation Street. I know it sounds cliched, but it really feels like a dream come true. Bethany Platt is going to be such a fun and witty character to play, and I hope everyone enjoys her return as much as I'm going to."
Well, I'm just waiting for like a baby to be born, and the mum's going to go into labour, and it's going to come out as like a 10-year-old or something. Yeah. That's going to be
next.
Go and
play with Simon. Is she going to have an Italian accent is the next question, and I'm going to say no. I think she's going to come in like she'd never left
Yeah, the fact that she's gone to an English-speaking school, they've said on the website, and she's obviously been brought up with Sarah and Uncle Stephen would have been around there, although that would have probably added a bit of Canadian twang to it. I don't think she will.
I think she's going to come in and she's going to be snooty and stuck up and say, make fun of the British food, which is such a tired and boring cliche that I don't even want to...
I think...
I might vomit if I hear that one again. she's going to say, no one can cook pasta properly. She's going to... Uncle Nick's bistro is going to be crap.
Yeah, he's going to be difficult. More wild for Gail
child.
To worry about.
More Grace than...
Exactly.
A nice child.
And actually, Grace was quite fun to watch, wasn't she?
Yeah, but she was a tearaway, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She's going to be like that. I think she's going to be stuck up, snooty.
Yeah.
I'm better than you because I was raised in Italy.
But I do wonder how long she's going to stay in for it. Because whether or not she can get away with being a 14-year-old now, I don't know. In 5 years' time,
on your high horse.
I am. In 5 years' time, the character's going to be 19, yet the actress will be 30.
That's not old. That's perfectly fine.
It's not old, but you can't pretend you're 19 when you're 30.
I'll have a go. Let's have a go.
Maybe I'm just being jealous and my receding hairline and everything.
Who knows?
It's crazy, but it's provided quite a good bit of drama and laughs.
I think it's been fun.
Over the last 24 hours, at least, which we've needed. So anyway, let us know what you think about this anyway.
See if you can uncover any evidence of this poor girl. Let's all stalk her on the internet and find out terrible things about her.
But we love her, really, and we don't even know her. We're not slagging her off. We've been slagging off Coronation Street more than her, and I'm willing to give her a chance. But
yes. How big of us?
Why can't they just cast someone her age?
Anyway,
that's it for another Conversation Street. There's going to be drama next week. This is a spoiler section, so minibus crash. It's going to be epic and awesome. I can't wait. Looking forward to that. Stunts, drama. Is a character going to die? Stuart Blackburn's been really good recently at pulling surprises out that people hadn't been told about. I mean, I know people are going to get badly injured. But it could be quite good if there's a shock death. Fingers crossed.
I think so, and I know who I don't want it to be, and I know who I do want it to be.
I don't even know. Well, I saw people talking about it on a forum the other week, thinking that Izzy was going to die and she's not going to be able to get out of. But I don't even know whether Izzy's going, to be honest. But who do you not want it to be?
I don't want it to be Carla.
Oh, they would. Or they Tracy. Would. They would never kill off Carla because Alison King is their poster. She's literally their poster child. She's advertising Coronation Street on some Irish billboards the other week. I saw online. They're not going to kill off her.
Kill her off.
It'd be brilliant if there was a shock death. And there's a couple of
people.
I
would like
it
to be Izzy. Sorry, Izzy.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, they're getting rid of some of the other Armstrongs. Why not? Anyway.
In the herd.
Exactly. We'll be back next week to find out about what's happened, about all this drams. Looking forward to it. And
yeah.
I hope you let us know what you think of the crash as well. And anything else we've been talking about this week. Right, we are off. We're going to grab our Saturday night dinner now. Have a good weekend, everybody else. And we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
The music for this podcast came from podcastthemes.com.